You're listening to the Savannah Zombie Podcast, podcast of Josh Vasquez. That's me, and this is a podcast where I talk about all kinds of things. I talk about, zombies and writing, of course, but sometimes I talk about things that I like, things that inspire me, such as Star Wars, Marvel movies, DC movies, and stuff like that. Yeah, games I'm playing, games I'm not playing. No, I don't talk about those because I'm not playing them. But this episode kind of is talking about some games that I'm not playing slash never played, because today we're talking about The Last of Us. We're talking about mostly the show, though, because I have watched the show, but I haven't played the games. So that's our main topic. I'm going to try to do the main topic for our episode up at top. I think it was like all the way, it was like 15, 20 minutes into last week's episode that I, it was even brought up what I talked about. So I actually haven't even posted this episode yet, so I'll probably like throw like a little stinger at the beginning, be like, hey, just a heads up, this is what I talk about in this episode, in case you're like, what is this dude, like, what's the point in this episode? But anyways, I said all of that to say this. I used all of this episode's intro to intro another episode that I haven't even posted yet. Anyways, hey, how's it going? You doing alright? That's cool. That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. Yeah. How's your life? How's your life right now? Interesting. Interesting. I'm glad you brought that up. So it's a earlier morning for me. I go in a little bit earlier to work today, which, you know, a lot of times when you go in early to work, it's like, all right, cool. At least I'm getting off early. That's just not the case. It's just not the case. So I'm a little extra manic by Wednesdays. And then by the time Wednesday is done, oof, Joshua's done. Thursday and Friday are a hot mess. You know what I'm saying? Anyways, yeah, so I don't really have anything up top to talk about. Other than Guardians of the Galaxy 3 comes out this weekend. The buzz for it is pretty positive. Seems like everybody, for the most part, has enjoyed the conclusion to this Guardians trilogy. Which, you know, it's just crazy. Because for a second, a hot minute, we weren't getting any more Guardians. Because, well, at least, we weren't getting any more James Gunn's Guardians. Because Disney fired him. They fired him for some old tweets that people thought weren't funny. And, you know, granted, they were very, you know, edgy. they were also, like super old. And it was just crazy. Because, like, you know, Disney had this very family, image, and there's like, no, we can't allow one of our directors to have at one time in the past said some things that have upset people now in the future. Like, we just can't have that. So they fired him, and then they messed up. All right, so they messed up because they fired him, and DC was like, hey dude, you doing anything? And he's like, nah, I just got fired. And he's like, that's cool, you want to direct some movies for us? And they brought him in to do the Suicide Squad, which, in my opinion, I mean the correct opinion, it's the best DC movie out of the DCEU. All right, so the old DC stuff, the Suicide Squad, not to be confused with its predecessor, just Suicide Squad, is the best movie in the DCEU. Does it tie into like a bunch of things? No. Are there some recurring characters from the rest of the movies? Yes. But does it have one of the best cast and one of the best writing and one of the best stories in all of those movies? Yes. And that's not to say anything about the other directors and, Man of Steel. I'm a big fan of the Batman. I'm a big fan of Zack Snyder stuff. Is James Wan that does the Aquaman. Fun movies. David Sandberg does the Shazam movies. Fun. Patty Jenkins, Wonder Woman, fun. Good movies, all right? But I'm just saying, the Suicide Squad is the best one. And then piggybacking off of the Suicide Squad directly into what became the second best thing in the DCEU, the Peacemaker show, which, how you take a character like Peacemaker, who is just a a jackass in the Suicide Squad. Just that lovable buffoon, and you make a show about him, and there's so much god dang heart in it, man. There's just so, like, it got me in my feels, bro, several times, and I'm like, just, and then, like, it even ties into the DC, like, universe. Like, there's a cameo by some of the Justice League at the end, which is, some of it's kind of funny, because I think it's, what, Wonder Woman and Batman are like, in the shadows or something like that. It's like, you don't see their face, but, like, Aquaman and The Flash are both played by Ezra Miller and Jason Momoa. It's great, funny little joke in there. But, yeah, so at this point, Disney's like, you know what, I think we screwed up, and I think it was a little bit before this, too. They realized they screwed up before he had made these things. Oh, look at this big old hawk, dude, he almost flew into my truck. I wish I could show that to you somehow, that it, through the audio waves of this podcast, through the digital, files. How do podcasts work? What's the deal here? Anyways, there's just this hawk that almost flew into my truck, and he was like, you know, it's cool when you see those birds of prey flying. Anyway, back to James Gunn and the DC and Disney realizing they messed up. So they realized they messed up. They're like, all right, cool. Like, yeah, that's on us. Why don't you come back, do the third Guardians? And he's like, dudes, like, I'm busy working for DC now. I'm making a Suicide Squad and the Peacemaker show, and they're gonna be the best thing ever. And Disney's like, oh no, why are you doing that? Like, that's DC's our mortal enemy, man. They work for Warner Brothers. And James Gunn's like, sorry guys, you fired me. You know, like, what was I supposed to do? I gotta work, you know. Anyways, he ends up coming back to do Guardians of the Galaxy 3. It's finally here this weekend. I'm super excited. I started rewatching the other movies, or the first two movies, this week. I watched Guardians 1 Monday night, and I started Guardians 2 last night. And it, those are some of the, I think those are some of the better movies in the MCU too. Like, James Gunn's got a gift, you know? He went from being a silly boy, making silly trauma movies, to writing silly tweets. Now he's making, you know, blockbusters that'll rip your heart out and make you cry tears out of your own face holes. And, quite the journey. And then one more little side note about old James Gunn before we jump into The Last of Us. He's like, people are stupid right now. I think it's just collectively, I mean, we can all agree this. I might get canceled for saying this, but I think people kind of all have their panties in a wad right now, and they just need to unwad them and put them back on. Put your big girl panties back on and, like, stop being a wiener about everything, you know? Anyways, James Gunn is married to a very talented actress named Jennifer Holland. I just went blank. I'm like, it's Jennifer, right? Yeah. And she has appeared in a lot of his projects as an actress, like, before they were married. Now, I think they might have been engaged during Peacemaker. But she shows up as just a background agent for Amanda Waller in the Suicide Squad. And then in the Peacemaker show, she's like one of the agents that's assigned to, you know, Peacemaker. So she kind of gets a more prominent role in there. But, like, she carries several scenes in that show. Like, she is a full-fledged character. She's a great actress. And anyways, now she has appeared in, like, an end credit scene for, is it Shazam? The second Shazam? And a couple of, like, other little things. And it's been more specifically since James Gunn has taken over the DC, studios. And I don't even want to say taken over, like, him and Peter Safran are now the people that are running DC Studios. So he's, like, people are giving him a hard time, like, oh man, he just cast his wife in anything. He's like, oh man, she's just make sure there's a role for my wife. Like, I feel like the majority of it's people that, like, have never had a girlfriend slash wife or, you know, significant other. And it's like, yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you want to put your wife in things? Like, if she's a good actress, like, there's plenty of directors out there. It's like, yeah, my wife couldn't act her way out of a paper bag, right? Trust me, I've tried. And, yeah, they don't put their wives in. But, like, his wife actually happens to be a pretty good actor and pretty good at playing this character. And she's kind of like a, I almost want to say like an Agent Coulson kind of character for the upcoming DCU, because she is like one of the characters that does survive. Which people were giving him crap about that. It's like, dude, like seriously, like why are we starting off like brand new DC like with any negativity? Like, let's just be positive going in. Let's see what they can do. Like, if the first few movies come out and they're not good, then we can be mad. All right, like, hey, you promised us all those things, you didn't fulfill all those promises. Then we can be mad. Let's not shoot the thing out before it gets out of the gate, right? Like, you don't look a gift horse in the mouth, right? I don't know what that means. Why are people looking at horses' mouths? Does it have something to do with the whole Trojan horse thing? Like, you don't look in the Trojan horse's mouth, because if you do, you're going to see a bunch of Greek dudes in there? Is that what's going on? Is that what that saying means? I don't know. But anyways, leave James Gunn alone. Let the man do his thing. He's really good at it, all right? I'm getting off my James Gunn soapbox. I'm gonna get off. It's fine. Anyways, Last of Us, HBO Max, still technically Warner Brothers. You know, your old cousin HBO Max. Excuse me. It's no longer HBO Max. It's just Max now, which is way more confusing. Why they would do away with the premier branding of HBO and just go with Max? No idea. So, like, I hear Max, I'm thinking, all right, cool. Is this like Cinemax's new streaming service? Like, are we getting just Cinemax stuff now? Is like, what does that even mean? Like, what is Cinemax even like? Is Cinemax even around? I don't have cable. I don't, you know, it's 2023, this year of our Lord. I don't have cable. Like, who has cable still? Who's still paying for premium packages on their cable when you could stream like just 3 or 4 different services and have all the same stuff? And, I mean, essentially nowadays you're paying pretty much the same price. But like, what are you doing? So anyways, Max. I'm calling it HBO Max. I don't care what you say, Warner Brothers. You can sue me for whatever. Sue my little podcast of like a handful of listeners, dedicated, you know, wonderful, beautiful people. You know, I love you guys. But, yeah, so, The Last of Us, and it's been out for a hot minute now, so, spoilers, obviously, if you haven't watched that show. For some reason, you haven't watched that show. Like, that's like not watching Game of Thrones during its peak, which, I guess, to be fair, I also didn't watch Game of Thrones during its peak. Not because I was like one of those, I was like, oh, well, everyone else is watching it, I'm not watching it, I'm different. I just didn't have HBO at the time, so that's why. And, then I did, and then I watched a lot of it. And by a lot of it, I mean everything except for the last season. And the only reason I didn't watch the last season, not because everybody was like, oh, the last season ruined the show. It was, again, I think one of those time things, and at the period of my life when I was watching the show, I was working late nights, so a lot of times I would come home, and rather than, like, you know, taking a nap before my family got home, I would watch, like, 1 or 2 episodes of Game of Thrones, and then just be tired all the time. So, I made it all the way up to the last season, and I just decided to not watch that last season, partially because everybody was like, just skip it, and, I did, and I've never felt guilty about that. Not even once. Maybe a little bit. Anyways, Last of Us, starring Pedro Pascal, who we talked about a lot in the previous episode, in Mandalorian Season 3. Dude, oh boy, Pedro! He's having himself a good time right now, isn't he? He's, like, everywhere. And if you're not on TikTok, like, he is everywhere. He is, like, taking the internet by storm, and it has been quite a wild ride for old Pedro Pascal. And then his co-star, of course, Bella Ramsey. Speaking of Game of Thrones, she plays the Lady Mormont, the child lord, lordess. I don't remember exact title. She's a kid, man. She's a kid, and she's telling all these dudes, like, hey, you guys better nut up or shut up, because we got some, there's a king of the north now, all right? And we're going to go kick some dragon-loving ass. That's a paraphrase. She didn't say that. But she does cuss quite a storm up in The Last of Us, and I'm 100% there for it, because it's great. The games. I've never played the games. Again, much like I didn't watch Game of Thrones when it was in its peak, I didn't play The Last of Us because I didn't have a PlayStation. I didn't have a PlayStation 3. I don't have a PlayStation 4. I don't have a PlayStation 5. I should get one of those, and I should write it off as a business expense for this podcast, because that's what you do, right? That's how it works. Like, nope, I needed that for my podcast so I could create content. Like, how much money do you make from this podcast? Oh, it's not about the money. It's not. It's definitely not. So I've never played the games. Only experience I have with them is just hearing from the sidelines from people that have played them, or seeing clips and stuff like that on the internet. Of course, familiar with the characters of Joel and Ellie. I know what happens in the second game, and I am dreading that episode in season 2 of The Last of Us, which they are doing a season 2. Spoilers, like I said. Good coffee this morning, Joshua. Good job on making that coffee. I knew the basics of the game going into the show, and I cannot tell you how blown away I was at the first episode of this show, and the way it opens, and the way the second episode opens as well. It opens up with, like, basically like these prologues, set, you know, in universe, but just completely different. Like, the first one in the first episode is like this. It looks like an older, like, almost like 70s, 80s talk show. So I don't know if this is like a, I don't know if they ever really confirmed, like, it was in the past. They might have. I think it is. But it's basically talking about, like, if, fungus ever decided to act up, you know, we'd pretty much be done. Because, like, there's really no way to stop a fungal infection, you know, spread of certain types of funguses, I should say. Cordyceps are particularly a nasty strain, or can be. It just really sets up, like, the dread of this series, because, like, this scientist just, like, pretty much is like, hey, like, if this ever happens, we're donezo, right? And then it just goes, boom, directly into the show, which picks up also a little bit in the past, which I want to say it was 2003 when the first part of the show happened, I think, 2003? Yeah, it was in the not in the near distant future of 2003. But it picks up with Pedro Pascal's character, Joel, and he is a father, and he's a father to a young woman named Sarah, and they are just going about through life. I think he's a contractor. He does jobs with his brother, who is played by, not Diego Luna, but Gabriel Luna, who I think I looked it up and there's no relation to. They just happen to be both Latino men with the last name Luna, which, if you know anything about Latinos, a lot of us have the same last name, but we're not related. So, but I mean, technically we are, just, like, you know, not closely related. But there's a lot of Vasquez's out there. They don't pronounce it Vasquez, though. They pronounce it Vasquez. Vasquez. sorry. I find my last name humorous at times. They're just doing stuff. And anyways, you get the typical kind of zombie stuff. Like, something's going on here, but the show's not quite revealing it to us yet. But anyways, stuff goes bad real quick, even think, does it show any infected? Like, just the old lady? I can't even remember. And that's one thing about this show. I'm going to jump ahead. I'm not going to do, like, a full, like you know, three-episode breakdown of the show like I did for The Mandalorian. I'm just going to talk about some of my favorite parts. There's not a lot of zombies in this show. And I don't even know if they're called zombies in that universe. Infected, you know. But, you know, they're zombies. There's really not that many. Like, it's like, you know, we always talk about, like, zombie stuff. Like, oh, yeah, the focus is on the characters, you know. You've got to have really strong characters. I can't tell you how many times I've said that on this podcast. But, like, this really was a big, strong focus on characters and not a lot of zombie action. Now, when there was zombie action, holy moly, is that some good stuff? More of that, please. And I think that was the big thing. It's like, yes, it did hold back on the zombie action, but when it gave it to you, it was giving it to you, you know? And yeah, like, it was giving it to you. You know, they didn't do anything groundbreaking, really, as far as, like, zombie storytelling, but, like, they did such a good job with it, man, and everything just felt just really well balanced, you know, even me talking about, like, how there didn't seem to be a lot of zombie stuff in it, I was fully invested with every episode of this show. Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey just completely nailed the chemistry between Joel and Ellie, and they you can tell, like, especially, like, when you see, like, off-screen interviews, like, not on the show, of them, like, interacting, like, you can just tell that, like, they had so much fun making the show, and they're just, like, you can just tell that, like, they're really kind of close in real life, and not in a creepy way, like Drake, you know? You know what I'm talking about. Thank God Billy Bobby Brown finally get married. you know, not in a, you know, R. Kelly kind of way. You could just tell that, like, they really bonded over these roles, and they just, like, man, they just nail that connection. And there are just some heart-wrenching scenes in this gosh dang show. And, you know, like, several times, like, and, like, listen, I'm a crier. I think I'm more of a crier since I've had kids, but, like, I've always been a crier. I've been crying since I was born, you know? Like, when I was little, you didn't really have to discipline me. You just had to raise your voice enough, and that was it. That's all I needed, and then I was cry town, right? And then I never did those things ever again because I didn't want to upset anybody. You know, I'm one of those. I didn't want to, not a people pleaser, but, like, definitely not a people pleaser anymore. As I was younger, I just wanted everybody to, you know, I wanted everybody to be happy, have a good time. Let's all be friends. Definitely several times during the show, just had me bawling like a little baby, man. Because most of the time when I'm watching this, it came out on Sunday nights, which HBO, Max, Warner Brothers, guys, we gotta work in the morning, man. You gotta stop putting these shows on so gosh dang late. 9 o'clock on a Sunday? Like, do you, like, the people paying for your service, we got work tomorrow, all right? Help us out, man. Put that, put it, like middle of the week or something like that. I need that midweek boost. And then you're like, well, then they're gonna be fighting against, like, Disney shows. And I'm like, yeah, let them fight, bro. I'll watch two shows on a Wednesday before I watch one show on a Sunday. But I did watch it every Sunday because I had to. It was imperative to my well-being to watch that show. So, several times, crying like a baby at night on the couch in the dark by myself. Family's asleep. And, just having a good time. Sometimes you gotta have those good cries. So, anyways, show does a great job of, like, setting up Joel as a character, like, first, giving a lot of the background reasons for, like, why he is so shut off, and, you know, he loses his daughter, and he doesn't lose his daughter to a zombie who Who does he lose his daughter to? That's right, a soldier, the U.S. military. Because, remember, folks, the scariest thing in the zombie apocalypse is not the zombies, it's other people, all right? And everybody's like, well, the military will save us. The military is made up of people. People who have families and homes and children and loved ones. I know, and I'm not making any slight of any of our branches of military in the oaths that they take to uphold our freedom, liberty, constitution, however you want to word it. At the end of the day, when the S hits the fan, when the doo-doo hits the spinning blades in the sky, some of them are not going to want to do their duty. They're going to want to take care of their own, all right? And that's a part of being human, all right? That's a part of having a human army. So until we get clones or battle droid army, all right, that's a thing, all right? And so we're also talking about not a normal combat situation with the zombie apocalypse, all right? So these are dead people eating living people, all right? Now, it doesn't matter if they're controlled by a fungus, if it's a virus, if it's some kind of ancient voodoo magic, you know? If there's zombies and they're eating people, that's not normal. That's not normal combat situations. And you're going to have some guys go AWOL, all right? Now, on top of that, you're going to have the brass, you know, the uppity-ups, throwing down some orders that people are not going to like. Hey, you're going to need to quarantine this area. And by quarantine, you're going to have to kill all of these people. And some people are not going to like that order. And that's the big thing about the zombie apocalypse. And this show does a really good job of putting that front and center, is when things go down in a way like that, which, you know, I love zombies. I love the zombie genre. I am not one of those people that like, oh, I can't wait for the zombie apocalypse to happen. I'm going to be so prepared and I'm going to kill so many zombies with my pew-pews. No. Anybody who understands the zombie apocalypse, which I feel like the creators of this show really did, Craig Mazin and Neil, gonna butcher your last name, Blonkins. It's a long one, but basically creator of the game and then creator of the HBO show Chernobyl, which, oh my gosh, after watching Last of Us, I was like, what did this Craig Mazin do before this? Chernobyl? Let me watch that real quick. Side note, watch that. It's amazing, and it's so timely right now, because if there's one thing I love just some straight-up government just messing up because they were too lazy to do something. I love it. Freaking love it. Anyways, back to The Last of Us. So yeah, Joel's daughter is killed first episode. Sets Joel on a dark trajectory. So, like, and you know it's dark because they don't even show us. And that's the rule of television, show don't tell. Like, they just, like, hint at some of the stuff that Joel and, what's his brother's name? Tommy and, what's the woman's name? I went blank on her name. Like, they just, like, yeah. You know, like, yeah, we did some stuff in the past. And that's it. That's all they give us. It's like, dude, how bad was it that you can't even, like, they make hints about it throughout the show, but, like, they don't really ever tell us how bad the stuff was. So we basically kind of cut from Joel losing Sarah to Joel in the modern times working in this, what is it, quarantine zone, the QZ, run by what is basically kind of what's left over of the U.S. government called FEDRA. If you think our government is full of fascists, which it is, then FEDRA's take that in, like, you know what, oops, all fascist. but really, and this show just does such a good job at it. It's like, yes, there is a lot of fascism there, but there are some people that are legitimately just trying to do the best thing for as many people as they can. And unfortunately, when they try to bring order to things, it brings out that human trait of just being a giant dickbag. So, yeah, Fedra, not great. Not the U.S. government as it currently is now. And basically kind of all of the bad parts. But again, people just doing their best to survive, which is a theme of this show. So it sets up Joel in this this quarantine zone. And it pretty much goes from him holding his daughter, trying to escape. And the next scene is they're burning bodies. And there's like a new person on the line. And he just can't have it. He doesn't have it in him to throw this child's body into the fire. So like they call Joe over. And Joel just like tosses it into the fire. Like it's nothing. Like it's just another day at work tossing kid bodies into the fire. And like this is how dark this show is. Like the show gets dark. And, I'm a big proponent of this, like, you have to show the darkness in order for the light to make any sense. And the light at the end of the tunnel in the show is Ellie. So, like, very early, they're setting up, this is dark, all right? These are not good times. And, like, that's one thing that, like, I did in my books. So, like, if you haven't read my books, if you didn't know I even wrote books, I've written a zombie series, the Savannah Zombie novel series, which is why I've named this the Savannah Zombie Podcast. I early on, I wanted to write a zombie story, but also wanted to deal with some Christian themes, like how would Christians react with like an actual zombie apocalypse. And I came to this like crossroads. All right, I can write a book that is clean, which means no cuss words and no naughty bits. And by naughty bits, I mean like anything like sexual violence is somehow okay. Different conversation for a different time. I could write this clean book and have it, it would be something that you could find in a Christian bookstore, or I could stay true to the message of this story that I'm trying to tell, but I'm going to need to show some dark stuff. Well, I opted on showing some dark stuff and saying some naughty words. And so I really haven't received any backlash for that other than my own mother-in-law wondering when I'm going to write zombie books or write any books for my young children. And my answer is always, my books are for my girls, just when they're older. Last of Us really brings in the darkness, and Ellie is the light at the end of the tunnel for several different reasons. For one, she is been bitten, but she does not become infected, and it's kind of revealed throughout the show like why this is. So there is this idea that she can be used as a cure, or to make a cure. And so Joel is tasked with taking Ellie to this group. I want to say they're out in Utah. I think it's Utah. But the Fireflies, who are kind of like a rebellion against Fedra, kind of an anti-Fedra faction. Which, again, like in the games and in the show, you fight both of these guys. Both of them are not good. Both of them think they're doing the right thing or the best they can. But both of them have major flaws. And one thing about the Fireflies that I'll say that a lot of people kind of were upset about in the last episode is like, it has shown throughout the show that even though they are, the rebels from Star Wars, they are incompetent in a way of incompetence that is like, they are constantly shown just not having their stuff together and just really the things going downhill for it. So Joel is tasked with taking Ellie to these Fireflies out in Utah, and they start off in Boston. I think it was Boston. So basically they're making their way across the United States, and in the meantime, Joel wants to find his brother Tommy. Tommy was with the Fireflies, and it is just like basically just these two characters. Starts off with Tess. Tess is the woman's name. Joel's a partner in crime, aka potential lover. Are they lovers? What are they? Is like, it's one of those will they, won't they things. But then she gets kissed by a zombie, and the fungus kind of does a weird kissy thing, which is gross. And then she's dead. So she blows herself up, which is pretty cool. Pretty cool way to go out, right? If you're gonna go out in the zombie apocalypse and you're getting eat up or infected by a zombie, yeah, blow yourself up, man. That's the way to do it. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Dire Straits. Side note, sorry, distracted. Let's see. So, yeah. I don't really know. I'm at work now, so I'm trying to figure out how to wrap this show up. I might do a two-parter of this show. Good, the DC order's not here yet. Is there room up front to park? Doesn't look like it. Oh, there's one space. I'll park in the back. I don't care. Since the DC's not here, that means I got a little bit more time. So we'll talk about The Last of Us a little bit longer. And if you're new here, if this is the first episode, you're like, oh, it's this Last of Us zombie podcast. All right, cool. I'll check it out. And you're like, what? Did he even edit this podcast? No, I didn't. And I don't. And I won't. And I refuse to. This is just all straight off the dome. And it is just unedited. 100%. All Josh. All the time. All right. So I'm not going to cut that out. Respectable podcasters would. And I'm no respectable podcaster. Let's turn the truck off. Get a little bit better sound. Sounds a little bit better now, doesn't it? It's my portable studio. So Joel sets off on this. And, of course, Ellie is 14, 15. Precocious. Chatty. Everything that Joel's not. Just a spark of life, but she's also like a child that's been raised up in this apocalypse, you know, world. She's not like Joel. She doesn't remember what it was like before zombie apocalypse. She only knows bad things, and as we learn later in the show, she was born right into it, which great use of cameos in the show. And by cameos, I mean the characters from the games. None of them played like the character that they are in the games, but they all played a new character. Peak jab. Peak freaking jab at it. So Ellie's mom is revealed to be played by... Ashley Johnson. Got it. Lockbox. Ashley Johnson, who is the voice of Ellie in the games. And then most notably, she was the little girl on Growing Pains. She has been in many other projects. She played that random waitress at the end of Avengers, the first one. You remember that one? Of course, she is probably, I think, most well-known now for her role on Critical Role, the D&D podcast, so she's a very talented voice actress as well as an actress, and she just plays Ellie's mom. Is it Anna? I think it is Anna. And she it just cusses like a sailor, like Ellie. She's pregnant. It's just a quick scene of her escaping from an infected in this abandoned house. She is pregnant. As I mentioned, she is currently in labor because of the stress, and she is in a upstairs bedroom behind a locked door as the infected break in. And she has a knife. Well, she ends up killing the zombie that breaks in, but zombie bites her on the leg. But right after the zombie bites her, she gives birth to Ellie. And Ellie's just, she's literally born into the chaos. The people that are with her mom, which ends up being, one of the, like, basically Ellie's caretaker, in the quarantine zone. I forget what her name is. What is her name? I don't remember that one. It'll probably come to me in 30 seconds. Find baby Ellie and her mom, and it's revealed that she was bitten. She's like, hey, listen, I had Ellie before I was bitten. She's safe. All right, please take her. But come to find out, that's the reason why she is not infected when she's bitten. It's because some of the infection got into her via the, I think, the umbilical cord as she was born. But she's not a zombie, right? So she's kind of, she walks both worlds like Bo-Katan. So she's got this special ability of not being infected, and they want to make a cure about it. And, so they set off across the country, and, the third episode of the show, like the first two episodes, like set up, Joel and Ellie going on this journey, right? And the third episode is just a complete swing to the left, and decides to bring in two new characters, Bill and what's the name? Man, I'm doing really bad on the names. I feel like I'm a little bit more on the ball. But also, normally when I do an episode like this, I'll like rewatch something before I do it. I'm doing this one with like having watched the show in like months. I don't remember. Maybe it'll come to me in 30 seconds too. We'll see. So, it sets up this character of Bill, and he's in this underground bunker, and it's the very beginning, and you see like it's either government or federal like going through, sweeping houses, making sure there's nobody in there and all that stuff. But he's in his underground like basement bunker watching on security cams, like, and it's just setting up like, all right, this dude's a prepper, like he's, you know, this right wing conservative, you know, he's going to be the one that's like prepared for this kind of stuff. And so it goes from him hiding in the bunker to the military or whoever like leaves, and then he comes out and he's like, oh yeah, and he just goes to work, man. And he gets the power back on for the local power station. He like sets up, like he like fills up the fuel tank so it's running on fuel. He sets up like a fence perimeter around the entire neighborhood town thing, because this is out in the I don't remember exactly where it's at, but it's out in the country somewhere. Ain't no city. He just, you know, it's like every prepper's wet dream, you know, it's like a paradise for anybody that's drawn some end times charts on a ammo box with a crayon. So it starts off that way, and he lives this life in solitude. And it looks like this dude is living his best life, right? He is, like, cooking good food for himself. He's drinking good wine. And just having a grand old time. Until something falls on one of his traps. And he goes out there. And it's a dude. It's a man. And this man looks like he's been out there in the wild for a little bit. So Bill is, at first, not going to let this guy in. And, you know, he's going to send him away. And if the guy doesn't go away, Bill's like, I'm gonna kill you. Like, you either leave or you're going to die. Like, you're not coming in here. He ends up, convincing Bill into letting him come in, and that he'll leave as soon as, like, I just want to eat some food, please, like, you know, can I just eat something and just go on my way. So Bill relents, because, you know, he hasn't seen anybody in a while, so he relents, and he decides that he's going to let him in. So he brings him in, he lets him get showered, he gives him clothes, and then he makes, like, a, like, fancy dinner. And the guy is just, like, blown away at Bill, and because, like, you know, we I'll take Bill as, like, this, you know, kind of rough around the edges, like, you know, grumpy guy, but the care that he puts into making this meal, and then just the presentation of it, like, one of the things that it's shown is, like, his house is, like, so dusty, because that's, like, that's whatever, but because, you know, he's doing other stuff, he's not worried about cleaning it, plus it's just him, he's not worried about, he's not cleaning it for anybody. But when he's, like, presenting this food, like, he makes sure the plate is turned the right way, he pours the wine in, like, the correct way that you're supposed to pour wine, like, as if he's, like, a maitre d' at a four-star restaurant. Man, I really wish I knew this guy's name, but I can't look it up on my phone, because I'm recording on my phone, you know. I keep wanting to say Ted. It's not Ted. It's not Bill and Ted, Joshua. Those are two different characters. So he kind of just, like, notices, like, these little mannerisms in Bill, and just how they, he just feels like there's something here. So it just progresses in, he sees this piano in the other room, and he's like, oh, you have a piano. Like, can you play, like, you mind if I play it? Like, I haven't sat down at a piano. It's been so long. And, you know, like, he kind of, like, does, like, all of this. He starts, like, doing things without, like he's, like, asking for permission, but starts doing them as he's asking. And you could just see that Bill's, like, he doesn't like this. No, you're touching my things. And, he starts, like, playing the piano, and he's not very good at it. And he's like, do you play? And he's like, yeah, I play a little bit. And, like, I haven't practiced in a while. He's like, okay. And, like, he, like, looking through the music in the bench, and, he's like, Bill's like, yeah, the piano was my mom's, so, like, this is all my mom's music, and he's kind of, like, looking through the music, and he's like, all right, you play this one? And Bill's like, no, I'm not playing that one, because it's got some sentimental value to him. He's like, all right, if you're willing, if you'd play this for me, I'd greatly appreciate it. And so Bill sits down and he plays the piano, and it is, like, flawless. And Nick Offerman, who's playing Bill, by the way, who most of us know as Ron from Parks and Rec, Ron Swanson, the freaking man, right? Who we think that this character is being set up to be kind of like that, which casting Nick Offerman as it kind of helped. His singing voice, like, he's pretty talented. What's his jazz name at Parks and Rec? Duke Cannon or something like that. it's good stuff, and he plays this just amazing song, and it's just so heartfelt and, like, just soft. In the middle, and it's like the third episode of the zombie show, right? And you kind of see, like, interaction between these two, kind of like there's something going on here, and then, like, it's very quickly revealed that both of these men are gay, and Bill has been not only, you know, living in isolation, but during the apocalypse, but he's essentially been living in isolation his entire life because he's been this gay man who doesn't really know how to fit into the world, and it's kind of revealed that, you know, like, he, you know, tried to have relationships with women, but it just never felt right. But he's also never been with a man because, you know, you look at him, he's obviously got these very what you would think conservative, you know, Republican kind of vibes going on. So you have this like deeply closeted gay man, and now this other gay man who just happened to find each other by happenstance. Well, there's a love scene, and I will say this, because I tend to lean more towards a conservative leaning politically a lot of times. In, you know, homosexuality, the LGBTQ plus conversation, and it's not really a conversation, like, it comes up a lot. And I think this episode has done more for the, I want to say specifically gay. The other ones, they'll have their time to shine. Lesbians, you had an episode later, okay? This episode specifically for gay men. I feel like this episode did more in creating a bridge between that type of person, the ultra-conservative, ultra, you know, right-wing prepper, like, manly man, you know, that kind of guy. I'm using quotations there. You can't see him because it's a podcast. I think this episode did more to create a bridge for conversations. Because the way that they portray it is a lot of times not what, you know, it's not what the right wing is shown, like on like Fox News or, you know, wherever they get their news book, freedom.eagle.com, whatever. You know, this showed two gay men in a loving relationship. And I think if that is shown more to the conservative, you know, like that kind of side, I feel like you'll have a little bit more traction and a little bit more room for finding agreement on things. And I think that's a big thing that this show did, is like it took a lot of different people from different walks of life and not shying away from the differences, not shying away from the things that make us different, why we view things differently. But the thing that unites us as humanity is what we have in common, and finding common ground. And I think this episode did a really good job of setting up for conversations. Like, I feel like I can have a conversation with somebody who is a lot more right wing, a lot more, in quotations, conservative, that, you know, would be considered a homophobe. I feel like talking about this episode of just television, a TV show, can open more doors to have a civil conversation than, you know, like what they're seeing on Fox News, which a lot of times, you know, like a gay pride parade, there's a lot of kind of like flamboyantness that goes along with that. And I think that's what rubs a lot of like conservative people wrong, that they see gay people like that, not like this. So I think good conversation starter is this episode. That's all I have to say about that. You have any questions about that? Feel free to hit me up on social media. I don't have any issue talking about things. I love having conversations. I love having conversations with people that think and see things differently, because that's how we grow. That's how we grow as people. And like, I felt like I had growth from just watching the show, which, just to take a side note, right now, the WGA, the Writers Guild of America, is on strike because they're trying to protect the screenwriters and just writers in general that work on television and movies. They're just trying to protect them from getting screwed in the future, because one thing that we've learned in the past couple of years, especially with COVID and everything went to streaming, and that burned a lot of people. A lot of people didn't get the, you know, the proper due that they would deserve, because, you know, a lot of things are tied up in contracts for theatrical releases. And when you can't release in theaters because everybody's quarantined by a fanatical government, you can't, there's the money that you're making is nowhere near. And like, that's a huge thing. Now we're seeing like movies like come back in and be blockbusters. Which what was the first one that kind of like kicked everything off? What's the first big blockbuster back? Oh, Top Gun Maverick. Yeah. Kicking the door wide freaking open. But anyways, the WGA is, on strike right now, which if you remember anything about the last writer's strike, the last writer's strike was the dawn of, or the apocalypse of reality TV. We can thank the last writer's strike and Hollywood not wanting to take care of their writers. We can thank all of reality TV on that event. And I'm still mad. I'm still mad about it. I'm getting fired up. All right. Reality TV, and then a bunch of just like top-notch shows just went down the pooper real quick. The writing was, you know, they tried to keep the shows going by hiring like writers that weren't on there or that weren't in the WGA. I'm not in the WGA, there's just television, movies, everything took a huge hit. And I'm hoping that doesn't happen this time. Shows like The Last of Us that really, and especially like this third episode in The Last of Us, like really just shows the power of good writing. Like this show, watching this show made me want to be a better writer. Like I was just as a creative, as someone who writes himself, who enjoys creating things, filmmaking, stuff like that, like this show made me want to do good work, and I love stuff like that. So that's my little soapbox about writing and about the writing in this episode in the Writers Guild right now. So hopefully that is resolved soon, and you know, just pay people for their work, right? Like you're Hollywood, you don't have to what's the word I'm looking for? The first thing that came to my head was a stereotype of Hollywood involving a certain ethnic group controlling Hollywood. And it's not because I think that, but it's just because that's been a more prevalent thing lately, because like Kanye West went off on it, and then like it's just like, and it's been a recurring joke in Hollywood for like the longest time. So there's that as well. It is, yeah. I'm not gonna say it. Just pay your people. That's all I'm saying. What else? So, yeah, back to The Last of Us. It is just great seeing Ellie and Joel interact with each other. They end up finding Tommy. Tommy ends up living in this commune, which there's a great joke in there about, Tommy's talking about all the good things, but like, yeah, everybody, we all work together, everybody's got a job, and everybody gets taken care of. And Joel's like, yeah, that's communism. And he's like, no, it's not communism. And then like the woman in charge, who happens to be Tommy's like I think wife, she like turns around and is like, yeah, we live in a commune, we're communists. And Tommy's mind is just blown. He's like, oh snap, we are communists. That's pretty funny. So they end up finding Tommy, and they end up finding this safe refuge, and then it's like, hey, like, Joel's got this idea that's like, hey, what if we don't take you to the Fireflies and get this cure? What if we just stay here and be happy? And Ellie's like, hey, I like that idea, but I just wouldn't feel right if I have the chance to fix all of this, and I didn't. So Joel's like, fine, and so they leave. They get attacked. Joel is somehow horribly wounded and survives. And, penicillin, a jab of penicillin straight to the stomach, because that's what Ellie does. That's apparently all you need, which I don't really know how penicillin works. I don't know how he was stabbed and missed any vital organs. I don't know how all of that worked, but it's still really good TV, so I ate it up. So Ellie ends up kind of having to go off on her own. She goes off alone to hunt, to get food, and find medicine for Joel. because he's incapacitated. And she ends up getting caught up with this group who turns out to be a cult. And, you know, it's zombie apocalypse show. It's only a matter of time before we find out there's some cannibals. There's some people eating other people in the show, right? So, like, everybody's just doing what they try to do to survive. Listen, if it comes down to it and you got to eat people, don't do it, all right? There's no coming back from that. Never. You never come back from eating people. Once you eat people, you're done, all right? And it is, yeah, things do not go well. Ellie is almost captured, and she is able to escape, and she does some pretty badass things, and gets the bad guys good, and just, I'm there for it. And, you know, I heard some complaints from, Christian people who are watching the show, because it is essentially a Christian cult, and they're using the Bible, which I always like to point out, just pay attention to what they're using the Bible for. Like, you, if you're a Christian, and if you have read the Bible enough to understand it, like, you should be able to discern and pick out, like, hey, he's not using that verse right, or hey, he's using that verse out of context, or hey, that guy's a huge giant pedophile dick, and he doesn't. No, he's not. So, and that's the case of this show. A lot of stuff like this isn't a negative portrayal of Christianity. This is how Christianity can wrongly be used. Which, hey, I'm not ashamed or not afraid to say this. Christianity has been used wrongly a lot more than I would say any religion. Like, it has been used to preach things that are not in the Bible. It has been used to condone hate for things that shouldn't condone hate for. And it has been used wrongly a lot. And unfortunately, that's just one of the problems of the Bible. It is... And listen, I'm a Christian. I'm a Jesus follower. I say the naughty words sometimes, right? I don't do everything perfectly, but like I listen, I'm not blind to see that Christianity has been used like wrongly a lot of times throughout human history since it's like since we had Christianity. I mean, Christianity was used incorrectly in the very beginning. Like, Paul's letters, like, some of them are dealing with a group of what's called Gnosticism, which was an offshoot of Christianity in the first couple centuries. And Paul is writing letters in the first century to churches dealing with things about, hey, there's this group of Christians. They're not doing the right thing. They're not teaching the right stuff. Don't associate with them. Like, that's, like I said, when you have a group of people, some people are going to do things the way they think is best, and that's not always right. Hey, kitty. Hey, little kitty. Meow, meow. Meow, meow, meow. Psst, 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 psst. Hey, come here. Come here. You gonna come here? Come here. Oh, nope, he went the other way. All right. And that's our cat break for today's podcast. Sorry, you can't see a cat and go psst, psst, psst. You're right? Like, that's a rule, right? What was I talking about? Oh, yeah, Christianity and zombies. That's why I love this. That's why I love this show. That's why I love Zombie Apocalypse, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to write my books, too, because a lot of times when Christians are portrayed, they are portrayed in a, I don't want to say a negative light, but like these guys don't know what they're talking about. And then the closest anybody's ever gotten was The Walking Dead and Herschel. Some of Herschel's motivations were because, you know, like, there's going to be a resurrection. We don't want to destroy these bodies. Like, you know, these are our loved ones. We want, you know, and then one of my favorite lines, like, in the entire Walking Dead is Herschel telling Rick, you know, it's like when, you know, Jesus was talking about the resurrection of the dead, I thought he had something a little nicer in mind. Oh, it's great. And that's one of the things, like, when I was writing, I was like, how would Christians who are actively trying to live, you know, their Christian life and, like, are trying to, you know, do things like the way the Bible is. Like, how would they react to this horrible, horrible event of a zombie apocalypse? One thing that I strive to do, especially, was like, listen, I need to be honest with you. It's like the people at the end of the day are still people, and like they're gonna be flawed. They're gonna have issues. They're gonna have hangups. Whether they're trying to follow Jesus or they're not trying to follow Jesus. So that is a thing that I try to put in the books without it being preachy. Like, I just want these to be, hey, these characters just happen to be Christian. Anyways, back to The Last of Us. These cult leaders, ends up getting killed pretty gruesomely. Again, doesn't show it, just shows Ellie just freaking beating the mess out of him, and then Joel somehow is able to get better and fight off some goons that the cult sent to go kill him, he's like on the edge of death, so he ends up fighting these goons off, and then he goes to rescue Ellie, but he gets there like after she's like essentially burned the place down, this whole dynamic has, like, kind of changed, because now she's, like, before, like, Joel was looking out for Ellie, now Ellie's looking out for Joel, and now, like, they're essentially equals, and, like, Ellie knows this, and Joel's having a hard time with this, because, like, he's pretty much put Ellie in this Sarah-shaped hole in his life, and he now is, like, he is very attached to Ellie as a daughter, you know, and he does not want to lose her. So anyways, they end up making it to Utah. Fireflies are there, kind of, the leader of the Fireflies, Ellie's mom's friend, who is in the beginning of the show as well, can't remember her name, she's like, you guys made it, like, we had way more people than this, and we've lost like half of everybody, but just the two of you made it across. And I'm like, yeah, we just made it across, man. We're just badass, you know what I'm saying? All right, cool. Well, I think they end up, like, knocking Joel and Ellie out because security reasons or something. I don't know. But the lady is explaining to Joel, because he wakes up. She's like, hey, Ellie's in surgery. She's being prepped for surgery right now. They're going to go in. They have to, in order to get the sample for the cure, they have to go into her brain and take out the fungus. And Joel's like, hey, I'm not a scientist or a doctor, but wouldn't that kill her? And they're like, yeah. And he's like, did you tell her? And they're like, no, we didn't tell her. We just told her that she was going into surgery and that she's going to make, this is how we're going to make the cure. And Joel's like, you fuckers. then proceeds to kill everyone, which is, again, the action in this show is so top-notch and so well done. We're watching this episode, and it was a huge divide. People were like, no, man, Joel did the wrong thing. They should have made the cure. And I brought up the point earlier that the Fireflies have been shown as nothing but incompetent the entire time. There's no way they're making this cure. One, there's no cure for a fungal infection. The scientist guy in the very first episode in the opening scene, he said it. Like, if this happens, we're screwed. There's no way to make a cure for this. And if you know anything about vaccines, which we all should know stuff about vaccines lately, right? We've all done our vaccine research. Fungal infections are nearly impossible to make vaccines for. Cordyceps and in this universe, especially this cordyceps infection. So they're basically going to kill Ellie and end up not being able to make a cure anyways. So Joel goes and kills everybody. And so you were either on Team Joel or Team Fireflies during this episode. And one of us was right and the other was wrong. And I'm sorry, but Team Joel was right. He went through and he killed everybody, even like the doctors who weren't even doctors. They were med students, which, again, that just shows the incompetence of the Fireflies. I know I keep using that word, but like, you're gonna make a cure for the fungal infection that has ravaged our planet with a couple of med students doing brain surgery? Bro, no. Joel kills everybody, saves Ellie. Ellie wakes up, doesn't know what happened. Joel's like, they said there's no way to make a cure. We're just, so they just let us go. So we're going back to Tommy. And Ellie's like, you sure? You tell me the truth? And Joel's like, yeah, I'm telling you the truth. You know, the whole parent kid thing was like, yeah, no, we definitely didn't do that. We definitely didn't kill all those people. Thankful I've never had to have that talk. It ends on kind of a sad note because you see this relationship is now fundamentally changed where Ellie knows that Joel's lying to her. Like, she knows. And he has chosen to try and do, you know, the parent thing. Like, I just want to protect you from the dangers of this world. But at this point, Ellie's like, bro, I've seen it all, man. What are you protecting me from? Like, and so, kind of ends on a dour note. But god dang, this show is so good. I need to do a rewatch of it. I think I it's one of those things I've been telling myself to rewatch it since it came out. But you know, time, everything else, watching and stuff like that. But yeah, so man, Last of Us TV show, I'm excited for a second season. I hope they don't draw it out to make more than what the game is. I think the creators of the show have talked about, like, hey, listen, like, we're only making, like, whatever's in the second game. Like, we're not doing anything extra, like, outside of, you know, like, further past the game 2. So, like, there's no Last of Us 3 yet. I don't think there's any talks of a Last of Us 3 in the works yet. But it is, yeah, second season is, I think, currently being worked on. Hopefully that's not affected by the... Well, luckily, we get the showrunners back on board. So you got the game creator, like I said. And Craig Mazin, the main writer. You've got these guys who are dedicated to telling the story and telling it well. So hopefully they will do a second season for this. And I think it's been confirmed that they are doing a second season, but I haven't heard any talks about, like, production stuff. But like I said, Pedro Pascal is everywhere right now. I just finished up season 3 of The Mandalorian. He's coming back for more Mandalorian stuff. Now, I will say, one of the interesting things about The Mandalorian and The Last of Us is, so in season 3 of The Mandalorian, normally he takes off his helmet, like, at least once, sometimes twice. This season, he didn't take his helmet off at all. And so people were like, oh, man, Pedro Pascal's not even in a suit. It's just Brendan Wayne and Latif Crowder, the two stuntmen that also are the, you know, they're essentially the body of Din Djarin. Like, they do a lot of the physical movements and the action scenes. Are essentially there when Pedro can't be there. So that was the thing with season 3 of The Mandalorian, is because he was filming The Last of Us, and he was so involved with that. Obviously, that is he's not wearing a mask in The Last of Us, so he's got to be there. That's why he never takes his helmet off in season 3 of The Mando, because he just, the way schedules worked, and like, people get all bent out of shape, like, he's not even in the mask. Like buddy's working two jobs, all right? Like, and if you want to insert a Latino joke there, I was like, buddy's working two jobs, and he's doing a better job than you. So, like, Latinos are hard workers, man. We're doing a lot of things, okay? He didn't take his helmet off in season 3 because he was filming The Last of Us. So I'm okay with that, because The Last of Us was so gosh dang good, and The Mandalorian season 3 was so gosh dang good. If you're crying about that on the internet, like, get a hobby, dude. What's your hobby, crying? Like, I just told you earlier that I'm a crier, but, like, I'm not going on the internet to do it. I do it in the safety of my own home at night alone. as you should. Okay, that's the American way. But anyways, Last of Us, really great. A lot of fun. And that's all I gotta say about that. I really do want to play the games now, but like I said, I don't have a PlayStation. That would require me to purchase a PlayStation. I'm assuming at this point I would purchase a PlayStation 5, which, just a little side note before, like, I guess the PlayStation 5s are becoming more commonly in stock. There aren't the issues with the supply issues as much anymore. So now all of the people that have, like, all of the scalpers that have, and they're not even people, they're animals, and I slaughtered them like animals, I don't think I cannot quote Star Wars, like, throughout one episode of the podcast. Like, it's, I feel like somehow I always slip something in. All these scalpers are sitting on, like, this tons of product that they can't now sell for crazy prices, because, you know, you could just go to the store and get one. And it just makes me so happy, because you guys are dickheads and you shouldn't have bought up all the video consoles and ruined, how many Christmases did you ruin? It's been like 3 now. Two, because it's 2020, I think, is when it started. So 2020, 2021. Oh, that was 3. Yeah, 2022. So we're going on number 4, but I think their reign of terror is finally over. So, yeah, screw you, scalpers. Screw you for taking all the systems. That being said, I'm on the fence. Do I get a new Xbox? Or do I get a PlayStation? Or do I get both and just write them off as business expenses for my podcast that it don't make no money? That's the true American way. And if there's one thing I learned from The Last of Us, it's we're in a silly place as a country right now, aren't we? It's so much fun. You know, I try not to talk about politics on the show, but sometimes it slips through. If you guys like the show, I would appreciate if you would leave a review of it on wherever you listen to, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. You know, if you listen to it on some other app, hey, I'd appreciate it if you just let me know. I need to know I'm doing a good job. I'm one of those, all right? I can do a crappy job for a while. I just need to know that I'm doing a good job. And ain't nobody told me I'm doing a good job lately. I need it. I need that affirmation. Oh my gosh. Somebody tell me I'm doing a good job. See, I told you I was a crier. That's it for this show. You guys can catch me on social media, Savannah Zombie, pretty much everywhere. I should specify, that's SAV Zombie. I get it all the time. What's Sav Zombie? Sav Zombie said, and like, I get it. I abbreviated it. Nobody knows what that means, but it's Savannah Zombie. That's how I say it. So, check me out. TikTok, Twitter. I'm on Twitter. I have 2 followers now. One's a bot. The other one is, I think, a person. So that's cool. I don't really tweet for people, though. It's all for me. It's just getting my thoughts out there. Go find me on the social medias. If you got any questions about stuff that we talked about in this episode, you know what I'm talking about. Hit me up. I'd love to have a conversation. So, talk to you later. See you next time.